Blog Talk Radio.
This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. Our show tonight is Whistleblowers, and it's jam-packed up already. I want to remind everyone that Whistleblowers is brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit. It's supposed to take place this year, July 28th through the 31st. We're all hoping to be there and hope you can all be there, too. We've got a special show for you tonight. We've covered so many things. Lawrence is with me. Lawrence, say hello. I guess he's not talking. Hang on. We'll try again. Lawrence?
I'm here.
Okay. There you go. Now we got you. We've just got a tremendous show for you. We've had a lot of people asking what happened, like with the Women of Forestry, what happened with the USDA and the Black Farmers, what happened with this, what happened with that. And so tonight, Lawrence is going to be interviewing, doing just real brief update interviews with past guests to get everybody up to speed on how far they've gotten, if they've gotten anywhere, what kind of response they're getting to the problems that they face. So, Lawrence, I'm going to let you pick it up from here.
Okay. Thanks again, Marty Oakley, for having us on. Tonight is going to be somewhat different than we've ever done before. We're going to do a year in review plus. And tonight we have Shannon Reed, Lisa Donnelly, one segment, Melody Mobley from the Forest Service. We have Rod Bradshaw. Joining him will be Michael Stovall, both farmers, black farmers. We have Cordell Davis from Rutgers University, researcher, writer on this issue of USDA and the problems that black farmers have been having for decades. We also have Nate Rosenberg, as well as Bruce Stuckey. Both are very well-known, renowned writers, do a lot of work with the magazine New Economy. And they have focused on USDA many times and have written many interesting stories. And they will share with us tonight some of their experience and what they know. We're going to close off the show with Marcel Reed from the Whistleblower Organization. And I think that now would be probably just as good a time as any to introduce Shannon Reed, USDA Forest Service employee whistleblower, and we have with us our Vice President of the USDA Coalition of Minority Employees, Lisa Donnelly. We're expecting Ron Cotton to possibly join in during the segment, and we also tried to get Denise Rice, who also was one of the women who came to Washington 2 years ago, who testified before the House Oversight Committee dealing with the Forest Service and the racial harassment, intimidation, and the sex abuse, which eventually brought about some very interesting events, which I know Lisa and Shannon will be able to share with us. Everybody's going to have to be very short tonight because we have very little time and we have a very full schedule. But I want to thank Shannon. I want to thank Lisa Donnelly for breaking away from her busy schedule to be with us tonight. Shannon, what did you cover last year, and what has happened to you? And Lisa, you can chime in anytime you wish. Shannon Reed.
So my name is Shannon Reed. I'm an air quality specialist, and I was wrongfully terminated by the Forest Service back in October 2018. after I was sexually harassed by my boss and sexually assaulted by the previous chief. Since I was terminated, I spoke at a hearing at the House of Representatives about the Forest Service, sexual misconduct at the Forest Service. And I've also been on several different radio shows talking about misconduct at the Forest Service. Pretty much in the last year and a half, I've just been working on my cases, and that's pretty much it.
Well, that's a very brief. Well, when you came on the show, you covered some
yeah.
things, and I know Lisa can probably chime in. Lisa, maybe you can add to what has been going on and what was covered doing that show in 2019. Lisa?
Yeah, I think, you know, Shannon gave a pretty quick rundown of, you know, everything that she's been going through the last year and a half. And, you know, we've called Shannon our poster child for what's happening to other women, because what she just told you has happened to her has been happening to a lot of other women and other employees. The last year and a half, we've seen virtually no change in working conditions for employees. And what's really so sad about that is the Forest Service has spent, you know, via USDA, has spent millions and millions of dollars in the last year and a half since Chief Took had to, you know, was forced into retirement due to sexual misconduct. They spent millions of dollars on these programs that they've rolled out to make it appear as if they are holding people accountable for, you know, sexual misconduct and racial discrimination and, you know, other types of discrimination and harassment. And it's not. It's not changing the work environment one bit. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's pretty. It's a pretty program. They've got beautiful brochures. They've got just fancy names for their programs. They've got nice training sessions with, you know, nice training packages. And, you know, it's a very impressive-looking program that they've rolled out. What they forgot was to stop the harassment and discrimination and to hold people accountable. Those are the two things that are missing in the entire program. The only two things that really matter, they have not focused on. Managers are still harassing and retaliating against employees. Employees are getting fired at a much higher rate than I've seen in a long time, having a hard time addressing it because of the Trump administration's executive orders that have tightened employees' due process rights, taken a lot of them away. So they have a hard time fighting it and getting back. The EEOC is just completely dysfunctional. They've been bad for years, but they're probably worse than I've seen ever in addressing situations. And, you know, they're under such a backlog and under such pressure at EEOC to get the cases resolved that they're just dismissing them out of hand, boom, without really even paying attention to the law. And that just throws the people into appeal, and then they get them off their docket. And it's unconscionable what they're doing. USDA, there's nothing coming out of USDA for employees. It's Sonny Perdue. I don't know if Sonny Perdue actually knows he has employees. I mean, it's a concept, I think, to him. But actually, employees, like real people, I don't think he understands that. And nothing has happened in USDA to make any conditions better for employees. Naomi Earp was there for a while as the deputy assistant secretary. She's gone now. There was no change. We tried to engage her. There was no change, no help from her at all. There's a new person in there now. I haven't even tried to speak with at this point. I have no hope that a new person coming in is going to do anything. The chief, as we've talked about before, last August 2019, We had these communications with the chief and her staff, and they made a bunch of promises to the women. Not one has come to fruition. Not one. We had that two-day meeting in August of last year. They never even got back to us. Never got back to us. Never fulfilled any of their commitments that they said. It's just like, you know, like it never happened. So I would say, bottom line, year in review, 2019, and part of this year, is that I'd give it a big F. I'd give it a rate of F in terms of doing anything to address employee conditions in the Forest Service.
Well, tell me this, Shannon.
What do you think
has changed, if anything? If not, nothing changed, what recommendations do you have? Because you talk to a lot of employees, especially women. What do you think should be done that is not being done to improve the work environment at the U.S. Department of Agriculture Forest Service, especially in the Western region? Hello?
Yeah, are you there? Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was on mute. I'm sorry. I was on mute. I had a whole speech, and you guys all missed it because I was on mute. It was practice. Yeah. All right. Well, I get tons of calls from current and former employees, men and women, and of all races, all complaining about the HART program and how it's destroying people's lives, even to the point of suicide. And so my first thing would be to get rid of HART. We did have that meeting in this year, back in 2019, the summer 2019, and we presented a proposal of all these different ideas to the Forest Service, and they basically ignored us. So, you know, if they're not willing to make some basic changes to the HART program or just get rid of it altogether, I'm with Lisa. I really have no hope that they're going to change anything.
Well, that's not good. Ron Cotton, I heard that. Are you on, Ron?
I've been on.
Okay, Ron Cotton, our president of the USDA Coalition of Minority Employees. Ron, we have about 3-4 minutes left of time. Can you give us kind of a quick brush of what you think needs to happen at USDA and what you've seen since that last interview in 2019?
I think that Lisa is correct that Mr. Perdue is not engaged. I think you need some leadership at the top. I think that OGC is still too heavily involved in the civil rights process at USDA. I think that black farmers, I think that women, in particular the women of Forest Service and other minorities at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, are fighting a very difficult battle or war in the workplace. And let me say something, Marty, if I may. I'm gonna take a little bit of a liberty here, because there were some comments attributed to me in the Food Economy article back in January regarding Naomi Earp. And let me set the record straight. Lisa, you may or may not know that Naomi was headed to California, but she was ordered to stand down. Okay?
I did not know that.
She was ordered to stand down because of the lack of leadership emanating from the Secretary of Agriculture, Mr. Perdue. And what you also may not know is that she had things in place to address a lot of the issues. And the reason that I want to mention this, and I have other avenues and I'm going to get this word out, is that I spoke to a reporter, Jessica Few, with the Food Economy, and she interviewed me for an article. But she took my comments and put a kind of a different or a negative connotation on them. What I told her was that Naomi was at a disadvantage. because of the holdovers from the Obama administration, and that's still a problem today. Let's just be real. And those folks are simply not up to the task.
Well, Ron,
Naomi could have taken care of the issues of Forest Service. She could have taken care of some of the black farming issues and concerns, but she didn't have the support of the secretary. And I'm going to repeat this. OGC is too heavily involved in the process. It's my understanding now they're even embedded into the supposedly separate Office of Civil Rights in terms of having complete and total access to all the case files. That's a no-no.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. Mm-hmm.
Also, I did say that I was disappointed that Naomi didn't get some things done. Let's be clear about that. But I also noticed she didn't get the support to do it. She had a ball.
Well, Ron, I think that's good information that you shared. Mm-hmm. And I want to – we don't have much time because we got to get to our next person. I want to thank the three of you all for coming on, Shannon, Lisa, and Ron. It really is good to do an overview. And sometime during the year, very soon, I would like to have you back on for a longer period of time.
No problem.
Okay,
Thank you, Marty.
Thank
you. Thanks, everybody. We appreciate you.
Anytime. Yes. Anytime.
Okay, thank you all very much. Marty, do we have Melody Mobley? Has she called in?
She's on. She's live.
Okay. Welcome tonight. This is Melody Mobley, right? Melody?
She's not talking. Let me try this. I've got two sign-ins on here. Okay, Melody?
Okay. I'm here.
Okay.
Okay, there you go.
Well, thank you for coming on, Melody. I want you to kind of give us an overview as to what you covered in 2019 and where you think we are today at USDA as it relates to many of the problems that you addressed on the radio show in 2019. And thanks for being on, by the way.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Lawrence. It's a pleasure and a privilege to get to speak with you and your audience about this subject. It's really dear to my heart. Since I spoke about my experience in the USDA Forest Service, serving the agency and the public for 28 years, and being forced to retire in 2005, little has happened since I last spoke with you. I've been trying to get an audience with the Undersecretary of Natural Resources and the Environment in Agriculture, who is directly responsible for the Forest Service under Sonny Perdue. And I just wanted to mention that. Lawrence, I had said I was going to mention it at the end, but I really agree with everything your previous speaker said. However, since Mr. Hubbard is directly responsible for the Forest Service specifically, until we can reach him, I'm not sure we're going to be able to get much done at all. I see nothing changing in the Forest Service. My work has continued in trying to mentor people, and frankly, I've backed away from forestry specifically because I don't have a good place to send them as far as an organization or an agency where they wouldn't be subject to reprisal, retaliation, harassment for speaking out when managers so grossly abuse their authority. So in a nutshell, that's where we are, Lawrence and Marty.
Okay, Lawrence, have you got something on in the background? We're getting terrible backbeat off your line.
Hold on. Okay, is it any better now?
There we go.
Marty?
Yes.
Okay, I'm
there
sorry.
I hope your audience heard that. I'm not sure I could say it as succinctly again.
Yes, you came out real well. Melody, you know, in all that's gone on here and everything, was there any attempt at all to reconcile things with you?
Nothing, not ever. I was seen as a pariah by the agency and the department.
Gee, many Christmas.
It was horrible. Even little things like I asked my supervisor, Doug McCleary, who used to be responsible for the Forest Service at the department. So this is a person with authority and power. Just for a retirement party when I left the agency, and it was refused me. So even a little thing like that was another slap in the face.
Wow. Wow. Jiminy Christmas. I this is just unbelievable to me, and that there's been no progress whatsoever. It, like you say, Shannon said she's done several shows, including this one. Several of you people have. You've been all over the place. You've been in front of these congressional hearings. You've been all over YouTube and C-SPAN and everything else, and yet this monster still continues to roll. This is just unacceptable on any level.
And
we're
and
paying
just,
these people.
Yeah, and it just gets worse.
Go ahead.
It doesn't get better.
Yeah.
It's gotten worse. I mentioned briefly, I think, last time we talked, but everybody knows Denise Rice. She's been on your show several times.
Yes.
And she was physically assaulted by a deputy forest supervisor a few months ago, and the agency refused to even investigate it. It was assault. They would not investigate it. What she was doing at the time she was assaulted is she was trying to help another female employee who had been sexually harassed and stalked and was in fear for her life. Denise was trying to assist her, and she was assaulted by a deputy forest supervisor. And they've done nothing to this perpetrator, and Denise is under investigation for trying to help this other woman.
Lisa, did
you
file
a
police report?
Yes. Yes, we have both women filed police reports. Yes.
I think that's great. Well, stay on, Lisa. I want to thank Melody for coming on. We may have some time at the end, but I'm going to try to move on to our next two guests.
Thank you, Lauren.
Ron Bradshaw. But I want to thank you,
yes,
Melody, for coming on. And Lisa, I really appreciate that added input, because that's something that needs to be reported and talked about and shared with the American public. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you, Marty.
You're more than welcome. More than welcome.
Okay. We should have a farmer, black farmer, who is tilling close to 2,000 acres, a farmer who has been in the struggle with the black farmers from almost day one, from the time I got involved back in 1995. We also, that's Rod Bradshaw. We also have Michael Stovall on tonight, hopefully. And we would like to hear from the two of them as to just what has happened since you were on last year, and has things improved from both of your standpoints with regard to the black farmers and this struggle to get justice from USDA? Hopefully Mr. Bradshaw and Mr. Stovall on.
I don't have either one of them. I've gone through all the numbers on here, and neither one of them are on.
Okay. Well, what we can do is do we still have Lisa and Shannon on the line?
Yes, and Ron.
Okay, and we still have Ron. Well, why not do this, since they have not come on? And let's use that time to cover some of the other salient points that the three of them want to address, and this would be a good time to do it, because they will be talking about the internal workings of USDA. And we can also talk about some of the things that, and I think Ron did a very good job of clarifying with some things that Lisa, Shannon, and I did not know about what the former Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights, I think she was a deputy, Naomi Earp. What are some additional points, Shannon, Ron, and Lisa, you all would like to add during this time frame?
Well, Lawrence, I'd like to speak to what Ron said. I did not know that Ms. Earp was coming out to California, but it doesn't surprise me that this happened because we had been speaking with Ms. Earp on the phone, had never met her yet, and she had expressed to me that she was going to come out to California and meet with the women and others who needed to be talked to. And she seemed sincere. Lawrence, you and I had those conversations. She seemed very sincere. And so now, based on what Ron is telling me, that she had planned to do it and that the Purdue folks shut her down, probably OGC more than anyone shut her down. And that makes sense to me now. And I think that's very sad. And that is an indicator of what we've been going through for many years now. One thing that we have tried to make very clear to every new secretary that comes in, to Congress, is that we have these officials, these USDA and other agency officials like at Forest Service, who are obstructionists, and they've been there a long time. And we've heard many of them even say, I was here before the chief got here. I'll be long after the chief is gone. I was here before the secretary was here, and I'll be here long after the secretary is gone, as their way of saying, the secretary is not going to make any changes that I am going to participate in if I don't like it. And these are the obstructionists that have been here for years that have kept the status quo of harassment, discrimination, retaliation. And so when somebody new comes in, someone like Naomi Earp, these obstructionists at all levels, whether they're in the Office of Civil Rights themselves or on Purdue staff or OGC, you know, the people that are in Secretary Purdue's ear, these are the people that are still controlling what's going on at OGC, in the Office of Civil Rights, at the USDA level, but at the Forest Service level too. And we have tried to tell them for a long time, you need to remove these obstructionists or we're never going to have change. And that, I think that's one of the biggest problems we have.
Not only that, Lisa, this is Ron, not only that, you need somebody with leadership. A leader has to make those kinds of decisions. And rather than oppress or push down or isolate the person who's going to make the changes and wants to make the changes, you need to support them. And Mr. Purdue simply doesn't fit the bill as far as that's concerned.
He is not leading
the Department of Agriculture. This is a case of the tail wagging the dog. Okay?
Yes. I agree.
Okay. Yeah, Lawrence Cordell Davis has joined us.
Okay. Well, thank you, Lisa, again. Please stay on because if you have some additional information to share with us during this period in case someone did not come on, we would love to have you, Shannon, and Ron around. And, Ron, if you can stick around that long, I appreciate it.
No problem.
And thanks again.
We're here.
Okay, well, let's go to, there's a young man by the name of Cordell Davis. Is he on, Marty?
Yes, hello.
Yes, he is.
Okay, Cordell, you're going to have to speak a little louder. My hearing aid is not working too well tonight.
All right, I will speak up a little bit.
That's better. Well, I want you all to know that Cordell came on last year. He's a young man who is very interested in what has been going on with the black farmers. He's written a number of articles on it. He's also generated a very controversial, extremely controversial video that addressed what the problems were when we contacted the Elizabeth Warren campaign. Cordell had added information that supported our claim that air property was not the major reason why, part of the reason, but not the real reason or the biggest reason why black farmers have lost their land for decade after decade. And Cordell added to that the information that gave us some clarity along with others. Cordell, can you tell us and the listening audience exactly what you covered and where you stand right now with this issue of black farmers, or anything you have to add?
Yeah, so just like you said, I've really been helping to expose a lot of the corruption been going on within the USDA, really all of the subsidies and all of the grants that they've been giving away to the large companies and not allowing the black farmers to get these same subsidies. And then you had Elizabeth Warren come out with her statement that black farmers lost their land due to heirs' property, and it really didn't take into account the manipulative tactics that were going on with committees during that time. You may have county committees who are holding their meetings and they're not allowing black people on their boards, or when black people start to raise their concerns, they just end the meeting right away. You actually had this going on in 2020. There was actually a city council in Lake Worth Beach, Florida, and they were having a coronavirus hearing, and the one African American on the board starts to raise his concerns, and then the mayor ends the meeting right away, and she starts screaming and she walks out. So this is on videotape going on this week, and you could just imagine how much of this was going on when black farmers were losing their land. So it's much more to do than just heirs' property. It's systemic racism right there on the boards. And it's really what we are trying to fix now, trying to help raise awareness to the issue and trying to help black farmers get their land back. So we did have some meetings with the campaign of Elizabeth Warren and then one with Bernie Sanders, but Joe Biden hasn't got to us yet. So we are hoping that is still to come, meeting with Joe Biden campaign.
Oh, thank you. Can you share with us, Marty, do you have any questions for Cordell?
No, but we do have Marcel Reed with us.
Oh, good. Okay, well, we're gonna close out with Marcel tonight. Well, if Marcel has a question, she can ask. This will be a good time that she can chime in and feel free to ask Cordell a question. And the other thing is that the one thing that Cordell was able to do, Cordell, can you explain why you took advantage and stepped out on a leap of faith to join a group of farmers that wrote a letter to Elizabeth Warren about this issue? What made you stand up and speak out and sign on to that group of Justice for Black Farmer group? Why did you do that?
It's really has a lot to do with the food system. So once you start taking one group of people out of the food system, you're really hurting the entire food system. So right now, with black farmers losing their land, okay, they're losing the initial first step in the food system, and then they're also not getting manufacturing plants to turn the cotton into clothing, and that's another big problem that I've been communicating with some other farmers. So really, for the food system to be as sustainable as possible, you want to ensure that every group is equally being represented. So if African Americans in African American communities, they're not getting the food from African American farms, you know, they're only being dictated the prices by large corporations. So they don't have as much purchasing power when they're going to the grocery stores because they don't have access to oftentimes a farm market such as you will have in wealthier neighborhoods. So it's just about the way that the food system can optimally operate is when you do have the African Americans being represented best as possible. So when I saw the opportunity to send the letter to the Elizabeth Warren campaign, I knew that it could help raise awareness to the issue. It could definitely help get the conversation started. People don't think about it as much anymore today. They just want to, with the big stores, the big grocery stores, the food system isn't always thought about anymore. But one of the funny things is now with the coronavirus going around, people are realizing the food system isn't a given, okay? If you don't know your farmers, you might be out of luck. If you don't have a farmer in your community, you might be out of luck. So it all comes back to that, about getting African-American farmers, allowing them to be engaged again. So really important that I found out.
Marty, do you have a question, anything you want to add while he's still on?
No, one of the things you mentioned about the food supply, we need to get back to growing our own food. Planting
exactly.
A family garden is quite a simple thing. It is a little work intensive, but you'll find you enjoy it. But this thing of relying on somebody else to provide your food, that's got to stop. Even if you're in the city, you can. I know many cities have designated areas for community gardens. They have. If you live in an apartment, have a balcony, you can grow on your balcony. If you've got big glass doors, you can grow a small garden in front of those glass windows. I've done that here at my house. I've grown tomatoes over the winter, so you know it's all possible. But stop depending on everybody else, and if you grow a big garden, give as much of it as you can away. You know, whatever you don't need, give it away to other people who might need it. That's just the way I see this thing. We're all in this together, and we can get ourselves out of this without any help from those jackasses in D.C. let's see. Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. We have Wayman Hinson has joined us. Okay.
Well, thank
Hello.
You very much, Cordell, for coming on. We're looking forward to having you on again soon, and continue your struggle and the plight, and write and make as many videos as you can to keep on focusing on this issue as it relates to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, its racism, sexism, especially its abuse against minority farmers, especially black farmers. Thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Thank you for your
Cordell,
time.
Cordell, I have a
I appreciate
question.
It.
Where can we find your video?
It is on YouTube. It's called...
Okay.
Yes, USDA discrimination, Elizabeth Warren in the future. And I have, yes,
okay.
I did go into details in the video.
Okay. I'll get that posted on the PPJ and boost it. All right. Thank you.
Awesome.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you for coming on. I think we have Wayman
no problem.
Up next. Yes.
Wayman, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good evening.
Good evening. Speak a little louder, Wayman. I can't quite hear you.
Let's try this again. Good evening. Happy to be with y'all.
Good evening. Good evening. Well, Wayman, when you were on the show last time, we talked about a number of things, and you have been engaged since then. And what was actually covered during the show that we did in 2019, and I think the one thing that we focus on primarily, and people would like to know what the status of that is, and that is the reasons why you have gotten involved and is in the process, along with Sean Hill out of New York, who are doing a very aggressive, broad coverage to some degree of a specific area as it relates to black farmers, and kind of share with our listening public as to what we talked about, and also kind of bring them up to date as to where you are with this video that you are doing. It's not just a video, it's a documentary. I'm sorry.
Just by way of summary, the documentary that Sean Hill and I have been working on has been a 2.5-year process. We were funded in 2018-2019, and so in June of this year, we finished up the filming, and at that point, everything is in Sean's hands for the editing. But what we did in that 2.5-year period was to take 6 trips across 11 states. We interviewed legal counsel. We interviewed 9 farmers and 9 family members. We interviewed the former USDA Secretary for Agriculture. We interviewed the former director of the Office of Civil Rights, Lawrence. We interviewed you. And then we interviewed the gentleman who had been working for the Smithsonian there at D.C. He wrote the premier book called Dispossession, that chronicles the ways and means in which, at the height of the civil rights movement, the USDA was over here sleight of hand stealing black farmers' land from them. So, but the documentary with the there were 15 African American farmers who filed suit against the USDA, and between 1997 and 1999, those 15 cases were solved, were resolved administratively. These farmers prevailed, and so we were able to get in touch with 9 of them. Some we couldn't find because they were deceased, just not available, and some simply refused to be a part of it. They had book deals or movie deals or other things that they believed would conflict with what we were doing. So what we wanted to do, what Sean and I wanted to do, was to listen to the stories of those farmers and their challenges, their resilience, the price that they paid for farming while black in America, and the price that they paid for entering the legal system with the USDA, because we know that the wheels of justice often move very slowly, and they will grind people to the bone. They will rob people's souls and minds and body and spirit. So that was essentially what we were doing. We got probably in the vicinity of 60 to 70 hours of videotape. That's been put into the form of an hour and 10-minute documentary. Sean has given it to a not-for-profit agency that does social justice work, a faith-based organization in New York City, for their opinion, and that is now open, and Sean is taking their critiques under advisement. So once we got back from June and all the filming was done, he's been doing the edit, and I've been doing the fact-finding for him. And so we've done voiceover scripts. We've decided who our voiceover specialist is going to be. We think we've decided who the vendor is going to be, roughly the sale price, storage, and that sort of thing. And what we really want to do is to put this video out on Amazon Prime. And once we get it done, the final step for getting it done is to send the documentary, the film, electronically to this one particular agency. And for a limited fee, they will do the closed captioning for us. And so once we do that, then we'll be able to get it up and out there, and people can buy it, they can watch it, they can rent it on Amazon Prime. And we have 2 or 3 other things that we're looking at. So that's kind of in a nutshell what happened the things that Cordell and others could tell us in terms of why these farmers were filing suit against the federal government. Those are long and detailed histories, all the way from racist attitudes, ignoring them, throwing their applications into the trash, making them fill them out with a pencil so they could be changed so as not to cash flow, finally getting about half of their money too late in the planting season. And so when everybody else's crops are coming in, the farmer can't pay his bills because he didn't get his money in on time, because the USDA didn't release it to him on time. So many of the farmers had to work under what's called a supervisory agreement. And this is where, if you're a white farmer, I'll trust you to manage your own finances. But if you're a black farmer, I'm going to nickel and dime you, so that if you want to buy a $75 piece of equipment for your tractor, you've got to come to me, or you've got to go and get the price for it, and then you've got to come to me with the bill of sale, and then I'm going to write you a check, and then you take it back to the implement dealer and get your piece of equipment. And by that time, the day is just gone. And every African-American farmer that we interviewed had had to work under the onerous burden of a supervised agreement. One farmer said that they made me feel like a boy again. And so we know what that's all about. And so the devastation to them was absolutely brutal. Now the curious thing, if I can go and tell a few more tales, the curious thing is that these 15 farmers prevailed in their suit against the federal government. So the key word there is prevail. And without these farmers, whose stories have never been told, there would not have been a black farmer movement. There would not have been a Pickford One. There would not have been a Pickford Two. So these are really heroes who metaphorically were Davids with five smooth stones in his sling, going against the 9-foot Philistine Goliath. And we know that the stone popped him in the forehead and he fell over dead. So several of these farmers used that metaphor, that frame, for describing the challenges that they had in going against the face. They were David, and they were fighting against Goliath. USDA, DOJ, and kind of a sidebar was that I participated in the first mediation hearing in 1997, and I saw firsthand the machinations of the DOJ. Now, that's a long, drawn-out story that we'll not bore anybody with now, but I saw the intent of the DOJ. And so let me get back to the point. So these farmers prevailed, and prevailed means that they should have gotten a nice dollar amount of compensatory damages. Some did and some didn't. They were all to have received debt relief so that their debt would be zeroed out. Some got it, some didn't. One farmer we interviewed says that his debt relief that should have been wiped out cost him $500,000. And then they also were promised, and I have these some of these contracts, they also were entitled to priority servicing, which means that the USDA county committee, the FSA office, would never discriminate against them again. They would be treated as if any other farmer would be treated. And that never happened. One farmer had to go to another county to get servicing. And then they were also promised first dibs on land in USDA land banks at a reasonable price. And that never happened to any of them. So there are two of these nine that we interviewed whose cases are still ongoing. One family, their mom and dad were promised three times that it was going to be settled, and then the USDA or DOJ found ways to get out of it three times. And then another gentleman that we interviewed, His case has never been settled. They had an agreement that he has in his hands, and I have in my file the settlement agreement, but at the last moment, the USDA pulled that settlement agreement back and denied access to the agreement under the signed settlement agreement. So that's basically what we worked on for those 2.5 years. And so what we have to do now is to finish editing it, do some nuts and bolts in terms of selecting vendors, making sure that we get the closed captioning done, know how much it's going to cost, the printing for the little case, front, back, side, getting all that done. And we're working on those things as we speak. And so we're not sure how the coronavirus thing is going to slow us down, but we're pretty intent on getting this thing finished the next couple of months. It's gone slower than we thought it was going to go, disappointed in that, but there are just some obstacles that we didn't anticipate.
Well, thank you very much. There is one question before you go. How were you able to get funding? Where did the help come from that made this effort possible?
Money came from two sources. I think that's a wonderful question. One of them is really ironic. So there are some leftover funds that were not given to farmers under Pigford II because not enough farmers applied for it. So there were, I'm not sure how many hundreds of thousands of dollars were left over. But then various African-American farmer agencies that work on behalf of black farmers were encouraged to apply for these funds. And so the group that I'm affiliated with, Gary Grant and BIFA, out of Tillery, North Carolina, we applied for several dollars for things related to BIFA, and then we plugged in a sum of money for the documentary. And so we got half of that money in 18, half of that money in 19. But I realized, and so the beauty of that is that the federal government is giving us money to tell the world the story of what they did to black farmers. And I think that is really, really ironic, really ironic. And then the other window of opportunity came when Sean and I realized in the middle of 19 or early 19 that we weren't going to have enough money to do all the traveling because things cost more than we thought. And so I pitched it out, created a page on Facebook, and to make a long story short there, we were able to raise a sizable sum of money via a Facebook fundraising effort. 145 friends, family, acquaintances donated well over $12,000. So when you added that sum of money and a little bit more to the money that we'd gotten from the grant via BIFA, we have a little bit more in the bank that we're going to use to travel on as soon as we get this thing out in the public. So those
well,
are the two areas.
Well, I tell you what, I really want to thank you and Sean for all the work and effort that you've put in. And it's interesting that there has been something good that's going to come out of this settlement, at least in terms of telling the history. And I think it's very important information in your documentary that America should be exposed and know about. Marcel, did you have a question before he goes?
She's not talking.
Okay. Well, Okay, Wayman.
Yes.
I want to say thank you for coming on, and I'd like for you to kind of stay close by because we got kind of an open window, and we have Nate Rosenberg and Bryce Stuckey coming on, and there may be some things that you can help with the closing. But we have an open window, and we had Marcel, so our tight schedule, thanks to Marty, was loosened with her forethought. So I want to say thank you for coming on. Stay close by. because there may be some questions at the end if we have time. And I want to now move to Nate Rosenberg and Bryce Stuckey.
I do have Michael Stovall.
Okay. Okay. Well,
and I think Marcel's trying to say something, but she's way far in the background there.
I'm sorry.
There you go.
Can you hear me?
There you go. Yeah, you just went out again.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, yes, we can. Go ahead, Marcel.
Marcel, go ahead.
Okay, so first of all, I wanted to say that I'm looking forward to them finishing the film. I've heard about it now for the last year. I think it would be excellent to show at the summit this year. And the story is so complicated about what happened to black farmers until when you try to tell it, sometimes it's difficult for people to grasp because the story is so nuanced and it twists and turns so. But I think a film would be great, especially with a panel. So I certainly hope that this happens this year and that this coronavirus does not get in the way of that. That was really all I wanted to say about that. Since the other guests haven't shown up yet, is Michael Stovall there?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Here.
Okay, well then, hi, Michael. Then you'd like to go ahead and speak to him. Then I'll speak after he's finished.
That'll be fine. Welcome to the show, Michael. We missed you earlier.
I was actually... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know you've had storms running through there, and you've been ducking the tornadoes for about a month now, but I want to welcome you to the show, and thanks for coming on. You have been a strong force for black farmers for many years, and I can't say thank you enough for coming on the show, but I can't say thank you enough for staying with this issue. And although it's been a struggle for you, but you have been involved with this black farmer issue for a long time. And I think that since Rod Bradshaw didn't come on, I think there's some things that, Michael, you would be able to clarify and share with our listening public about this whole issue, about where we are and where we need to go in terms of the struggle of black farmers in this country.
I just want to say thank you for inviting me to participate in the show, and thank Wayman for reminding me with a text because I had lost track of time. And I really appreciate Marty allowing us to have this time to speak on the behalf of the issues of the black farmers, because it's been a struggle for me for 28 years with a finding the discrimination, the breach of settlement agreement. I started out in fighting USDA when I was 29 years old, and I'm 56 today. It's been a struggle, but, you know, God has sustained me to continue to fight this battle. But I have seen many black farmers die and suffer because of the stress that taking them out of here because of discrimination, taking the farmland, killing your cows, and bringing up on erroneous charges to run you completely out of business. So we had to stay in the fight because it's not over with yet. And I think I fought the congressmen and the senators and the presidents and all and above for not doing something about this problem, because it's been well documented. You can't get better document than what's already been documented for them to do something about the problem. And it's just all across the United States that black farmers have lost millions of acres of land and steady losing land because they steady foreclosing on black farmers. Even after prevailing in the Pixar lawsuit, they still coming back, putting the debt back on them and taking the land. So that's continued to go on as of today, and seem like nobody want to address it, just like Wayman was talking about the inventory farms that's supposed to been given back, having the farmers supposed to have priority consideration to be able to go back and take one of those farms over and being able to continue to farm. But in that case, it never happened to all of the farms. I don't know any farmer got an inventory farm. I don't know any, hardly any farmers that even got debt relief when they're supposed to gotten it. So that Pickford was a waste of taxpayers' money because the farmers, the original farmers never got paid. The people that tempt the farmer got paid because all they wanted to do is take the original farmer's land. That was the plot from the beginning. So, and we're still in this struggle. It needs to be another class action lawsuit filed so the real farmers can get justice and for the land that's been wrongly taken to be paid, compensated for. So we're still in the movement, doing the best we can at this point and asking for justice and asking for the congressmen to step up and do something about the problem because it's a big problem all across the United States. So thank you very much again for having me on the show. I don't want to take up a lot of your time. I just want to touch it here and there so you can get a little bit of understanding of what's going on in America when it comes down to black farmers losing land.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, Lucas, this is Ron. I have to make a comment behind. Mr. Stovall is a farmer, and he makes a very good point. All of this is well documented, everything we're talking about. So now everybody that approach always says, well, we got to study the situation to see we don't need to study anything. And that's why we reached out to some of these others about their plan of action. How are you going to deal with it? We don't need to study this anymore. It's well documented, as Mr. Stovall has said.
Oh, thank you very much. I did get and Michael Stovall, thank you, and Ron, thanks for the added input. I did get an email that came in minutes ago that Nate Rosenberg and Bruce Stuckey tried to call in, but the line was busy. So maybe what we, Marty, do we have to free up some lines to get them in? Because I definitely, we have an open window here, so we can keep on rolling if at all possible. So we can
Let me drop off.
Yeah.
I'll drop off.
Okay, if
well,
you can drop off.
Well, before you do, Ron, you do. Do you remember when you were on the show with Lawrence and we had that gentleman, and I use that term loosely here, from Texas who was baiting me over why I was doing shows basically with black people when, of course, I am fluffy white, and made several odd remarks. Well, he's back. And he said, I see you're at it again. Somebody needs to sit you down and teach you what it means to be a white woman. Oh, they did, uh-oh, sweetheart, they did. I decided I didn't like it. But anyway, he goes on and he says, it disgusts me that you continue to do this. Fluffy, Tubby, whatever your name is, whatever your real name is,
don't
you
say it,
Marty. The same thing I said. The first, yes, I am. You can kiss my fluffy white butt. And that's all there is to it. You have a good evening, Tubby. You have a good evening. Anyway, moving on.
Moving along. Okay. Ron, if you can drop off, and Shannon, if Ron drops off, and if maybe Shannon, drop off and maybe come in after we get Nate and Bruce on into the incoming line.
Okay. We can try that.
We can try that.
Okay, I got five lines loosened up now, so they should be able to get in. A number here that's area code 617. Could that possibly?
Okay, hold. Let me check, Marty. Hold just a minute. Oops. That could be him, Marty. I don't know.
Okay,
You
go ahead here for a minute, and I'll go check these lines.
Okay.
You just go ahead.
Yes. Well, I'm hoping that we can get Nate and Bryce Stuckey in tonight. The one thing that for sure that these shows have been a wealth of knowledge to many, and we know that we have a broad listening public from Australia, and we're going to continue this show, and I really want to thank all the people that came on tonight, and Marcel, I'm so pleased that you're on, and you will get a chance to share with us more about the Whistleblower Summit coming up maybe this year, if not for the virus problem. But
yep.
I'm hoping that we can get Nate in. Has he called in?
But they're in. They're, I got him, Lawrence. They're on. I got him.
Okay, fine. Well, okay. Nate and Bruce, are you there?
We're here. Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming on tonight. We have kind of like an open end here. We do have Marcel Reed, who is with us, and I think we still have Lisa Donnelly and maybe Shannon Reed as well, and maybe Ron may chime back in. But the two of you have been writing a great deal about USDA for quite a while. And in your coverage and in your research, the one thing I found in your article with the New Economy and other stories that you've written, you have, the both of you all, have true evidence about the issue of the black farmers as well as the civil rights structure and abuse that has been going on administration after administration, president after president, and secretary after secretary. I want to thank the both of you all for coming on tonight, and I would like for you all to kind of give our listening audience what you've been doing, what you did when you were on the show, and what you've been doing, and what research or information you can share. And some of that information that you may think is old and not important, this will be a good time to share it because we do have new listeners all the time. Thank you for coming on, to both of you.
Great. Yeah, thank you so much for having us. So I guess I'll start by, you know, I think we were listening beforehand, and both Mr. Stovall and Mr. Bradshaw were talking about how much evidence there is. And that is something, you know, there's the historical discrimination against black farmers is incredibly well documented. And our project got started, you know, after our research is focused, although we've done some research prior to Pigford, our research is focused on the post Pigford II era. And we can talk a little bit more about this, but, you know, as many of your guests and you, I'm sure, are aware, there was a myth that USDA cleaned up its act and compensated black farmers for the discrimination that happened. And then going forward during the Obama administration, was treating black farmers equitably. And our investigation looked at the data that USDA was using to try to argue that they're treating black farmers fairly. And we found overwhelming evidence that the discrimination not only continued, but got worse in some ways, in part because USDA was successfully covering it up.
Wow. Well, Bruce, what can you add to that? Because there's a lot more to what all the research, and can you give some kind of specifics, some of the data, some of the information that you to embellish what Nate has already said?
Yeah, I'll try. So one big piece of our article is about how the
we can talk.
How the department used statistics to misrepresent its supposed policy outreach to black farmers, and we talked specifically about the Census of Agriculture in 2012. The department said it showed an increase in black farmers, but we proved that that was not an actual increase. So that was kind of like the crown jewel in their scheme of deception to fool the public about how black farmers are being treated. I think another shocking statistic that Nate uncovered through a FOIA request is that a lower share of total loans went to black farmers under the Obama administration than had gone out under Bush. That kind of floored us. And, you know, since we wrote that article, we've been working on two big projects. One is to estimate how much the land that black farmers owned early in the 20th century would be worth today, and it's a large amount. And we're working with a team of economists and other academics to estimate that. And then we're also working on an article with the investigative journalist, Catherine Joyce, about abuses in the civil rights office, both, you know, in the recent past and ongoing. And we want to show how the corruption in the civil rights office affects people, both in the office and people who deal with USDA throughout the country and all kinds of different programs. So a lot of the problems come back to the dysfunction in that office. So that's kind of what we're working on now and hope to get it out in the near future.
Thank you. In the, there was a Washington Post story that covered some of what, to a large degree, in terms of the real evidence, they kind of covered a bit about how the what I call bogus information that was being given out by the administration. Did some of that information, because my understanding is that Tom Vilsack indicated that his administration is the best administration in the history in terms of civil rights in the history of USDA. Based on my history and what I know, I can't see any administration doing a better job at civil rights than the Clinton, Dan Glickman era. Am I correct in some of what I've said? Can you give me some clarity here? Nate?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely. Vilsack, in our interview, we asked him, or when we were pressing him on the data and pointing out the discrepancies between the claims he made and the actual data that we had, he kept defending himself by saying, "You know, I've done a hell of a lot better than anyone else." He said something along those lines. I don't remember the exact quote. And he, you know, and something that Bryce really zeroed in on really early is that from the very beginning of his administration, he claimed that there's a new era of civil rights at USDA. It turned out just to be complete a PR effort and little else.
Yeah, that was kind of the plan in the beginning. You know, there was like a memo from, I can't remember now, but it was within the first few months, I think, of when Vilsack took office, saying,
yeah,
like, oh, there's already a new era of civil rights. You know, like they had fixed everything overnight, and that was the PR plan, you know, from the beginning, which they pulled off with the help of media cooperating with them. But we know that that was not reality.
Well, based on what I know you all are working on additional stories, is there anything in any that you all can share in terms of what specifically you all will be focusing on in your upcoming stories? Can you share to some degree what that coverage will be about or will look like?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think so. Our first article looked at how USDA and the Civil Rights Office covered up discrimination against black farmers. And what we're focusing on now is we're trying to understand better the dynamics within the civil rights process and within the Civil Rights Office at USDA. Because this, as you and your guests have discussed, this doesn't just affect black farmers. This affects USDA employees and other customers, too, who have been sexually harassed, sexually assaulted, discriminated against. And when they try to go through the civil rights process, they meet the same kind of roadblocks that black farmers have met. And so we're taking a closer look at the Civil Rights Office, which we discussed in our earlier article. But I think we're going to go into much greater depth with our next one.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to focus more on
Bryce,
the,
can you add to that,
like,
please?
Yeah, we're going to focus more on the we sort of did a history of the Obama administration's treatment under Tom Vilsack. How USDA treated black farmers. This one will, we're thinking of opening with vignettes of different people who've been affected by, who have been harassed or had their civil rights denied by USDA, filed a claim only to see it, die in the civil rights office like so many people have been through. And I don't think that, I don't know if policymakers who care about these issues really understand how much of a problem the Civil Rights Office is. So we really want to document that and drive that home for people. So we will be attempting to convey, to the public what you and your guests already know so well about the Civil Rights Office. And I hope when we have something together, we can come back on with Catherine Joyce, our co-author, because she'll be doing probably on this story.
Oh, thank you very much. There was something else that you all have had the opportunity to see some of the stories that have come out with regard to Elizabeth Warren. And what she has put on the table in support of black farmers. From the both of you all's standpoint, can you all give our listeners an idea from a researcher and a study of USDA, what do you see in the Warren campaign, and what do you see can be done as a result of her laying out a benchmark for others running for president to follow? Can you all kind of share some information in that regard based on what you've read about the plan?
Sure. Oh, sorry, Bryce, the line dropped him, so I'm just going to merge him in again real quick.
Okay, thank you. Marcel?
Hi, Bryce, are you there?
Okay.
Okay, hi, can you hear us?
Hello?
Bryce, can you hear me? Yeah, hi, can you hear us? Oh, no.
Okay.
Okay. Do we still have Nate on the line?
Yes.
Mark?
And you have Rod Brad. Yeah, and you have Rod Brad.
I can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. So sorry about that. Bryce's line dropped. So Bryce, the Lawrence asked the question about Elizabeth Warren's plan.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, you know, I think what I think it was a very ambitious plan, and even more so, I think what was exciting about it was that she adopted ideas from black farmers and activists who work on these issues. And it's not entirely without precedent because Secretary Glickman and the Clinton administration listened to the concerns of black farmers and advocates, but that Warren adopted these proposals, and they were many of them were incredibly ambitious proposals, like the land bank, for example, which would set aside new land for black farmers. You know, during a campaign, I think was a rare source of optimism on these issues, and hopefully, whoever the Democratic nominee ends up being, they'll adopt a similar platform.
Yeah, I agree. It was very encouraging to see her platform and
Lawrence.
I believe she
I'm here.
To,
I don't know what happened there.
Yeah.
Anybody?
I'm here, Marty.
Hello.
Hold on.
Can you
I
all still hear me?
We have a disconnect.
I got no audio.
We're
here. Can you hear us?
I'm here, Marty. Okay, we are running into some technical difficulties. So if you all would just stay on while we try to work this out.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. We may have to end up calling back in. I don't know. Marcel, are you still on the line? Okay, because there was Marcel Reed, who's head of the whistleblower organization. She was on the line as well. And we also had Rod Bradshaw, a black farmer from, I think, Kansas or Kentucky. I can't remember now. But he was on as well. So, and we did extend our time to 2 hours. So when we found that some of the people didn't come on, we were able to extend other interviewers' time. And we were able, and I want to thank you and Bryce for coming on, Nate, because I think your input on this is very valuable to our listeners.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
great.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for it's a very late hour, but thank you. What I may do is, I don't know what the problem is, but let's do this. Why not you, all of us, hang up and
okay?
Call.
Are you there?
Yeah, we're here,
Lawrence.
Marty.
Okay. Yeah, it came back up. I lost audio too there. Something they were doing there with switching those lines cut us off.
Okay,
so,
well, we still have Bryce, and we still have Nate, and I think Marcel is still with us.
No, we lost her, but I do have Mr. Bradshaw waiting.
Okay, after we finish with Nate, we'll have Rod Bradshaw to come on.
Okay.
Marty, do you have any questions for Nate? I just thank the both of them for coming on. Is there anything that you would like to ask? And if there's anything that the both of them would like to summarize before closing?
All right, I'd just go ahead to their summary here. I'm having trouble with the audio, so let's go ahead and let them talk.
Okay, go ahead. Nate?
Yeah, so I'll be quick in case Bryce wants to say anything, but I think, you know, in summary, what we're trying to work on now is, in our last article, we laid out exactly how the system continued to discriminate against black farmers, and the USDA covered that up under the Obama administration. But I think it's incredibly important to realize that this isn't, you know, we focused on the Civil Rights Director at that time, Joe Leonard, and the Secretary of Agriculture under Obama, Thomas Vilsack. But what we're trying to show in our new work is that this isn't just about those two individuals. This isn't a case of some bad actors here and there. This is about a system that is set up to quash legitimate discrimination complaints and employee complaints. And we hope that we can show how this system works and how this system causes a lot of human pain and misery.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Bryce?
Yeah, I think Nate sums it up well. But it's, you know, as we know, it doesn't matter who's in the driver's seat, like who's in the president's office or who's in the secretary's office. If they don't take, you know, real action to reform this office, things go on as they always have, and that's what we want to communicate to the public.
Well, I want to thank the both of you all for coming on tonight, and we're looking forward to having you all on again when your stories. Please contact us so that as soon as your story comes out, we would like to have you on the show again and to let our listeners know more about what you've written and why you wrote it. So thank you very much and your patience tonight for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us on.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks again for having us.
Okay.
You bet.
Okay, okay, Marty, do we have Rod Bradshaw on? I'd like to get him on.
Yes.
Before we get to, because I want Marcel to close the show down. Is she still on, Marty?
No, she isn't. She got knocked off.
Okay, well.
Hopefully she'll call back in. Mr. Bradshaw is live.
Okay, Rod. Rod, let us know what you covered and what you talked about and what has happened since you were on the show in 2019.
Okay. We have, there's been a suit filed in Washington, D.C. to address USDA's noncompliance with this Pickford settlement. I personally have a suit that's been in the D.C. court since 2004, and it yet remains unsettled. USDA has made an agreement. They made it's almost like the treaties they made with the Indians. They one guy told me they made 2,500 treaties. They broke 2,499 of them. USDA has made an agreement to settle this issue with black farmers, and they have not lived up to their agreement that they originally made. And it just seems that we can't get when you're fighting big government, it's an uphill battle all the way, and we just cannot seem to get them to any legal help on this as to why they are exempt. USDA, what I mean by they, are exempt from an agreement. Anytime you make an agreement and get the case to settle the case, and then you don't live up to your agreement in ordinary circumstances, there'd be some repercussions from it. But these guys have just done this and done this and done this, and we just can't seem to get anywhere with them. And the lower courts, which the state courts have chimed in with them, and we just seem like the legal system of America has completely failed the black farmer, because we have legitimate complaints here, we have legitimate things that have happened, and they're just being ignored, and we just can't get justice here. We need to get this thing taken care of. USDA continues continues their role of discrimination against the black farmer and not only the black farmer, most minority farmers in general are discriminated against by the USDA. And it just seems like, you know, we just can't get anything done. And we need to pull together. Now, this coronavirus, I believe I'm saying that right, has hit the country, and people are trying to pull together and get this thing licked. We need to pull together as a unit and try to get this thing taken care of and get over the hump, so to speak, and get back on track, like, you know, what they were originally designed to do, and that was to help agriculture. And they're helping agriculture, all right. They're helping the white farmers and the big farmers and trying to drive the small minority farmers out of business, completely out of business. And that's evident by the number of acres that was owned in the early 19th century, or 20th century, in the early 1900s, versus what is owned by minority black farmers right now. There's been a substantial decrease in acres. An auctioneer once told me, he said, when you own the land, you have power. And once they get this land away from us, then, you know, this country was built by slave labor, basically. So why are we having such an issue with giving credit where credit is due? And we have been in this. I've been in this fight since the early 70s, and we're still fighting an uphill battle. I'm not sure why or how this is possible in this country where we're all supposed to be created equal, and we all have equal opportunity.
Well, do you think that this virus is going to this virus issue? That is going on now is going to destroy many minority and black farmers. Do you think it's going to have an awesome impact from your viewpoint?
I doubt it, because the virus is basically attacking populated areas where we're out here in the boondocks, so to speak. Our chances are minimal. They're there. Don't get me wrong. We all have the chance to contract this. We just have to, you know, we have to watch who we come in contact with, what we do, and whatnot. But our exposure to it is not as near great as the inner city, where, you know, there's a large population and whatnot. And this airborne virus, as they're calling it, there may be a reason why it's hit here, and that's all. I'm not going to elaborate on that. That's all I'm going to say about it. The situation here is, if we stay on, stay the course and whatnot, there is a higher power in charge of this whole deal. So, you know, enough's enough, and when enough is gotten. And I'm not saying that, I'm not preaching to anybody, I'm not preaching to anything, I'm just making a statement there. And this thing will come, it will come to pass if we just stay the course.
Okay. Well, Rod, I don't have a lot of questions. I wanted to have you on, and we're running pretty much out of time. But I want to thank you for being persistent and getting on tonight. And I want to continue to stay in contact with you. And at any point in time you want to come back on the show after this crisis to let us know what's going on with black farmers, feel free to call either Marty or myself. And I want to, if there's nothing else, I want to thank you. Is there something you want to summarize, or have you're done?
Well, we need to come up together on one accord and try to get our message through that we have been discriminated against, we are still being discriminated against, and the way things are going, this discrimination is going to continue until we get some accountability and someone to step to the plate and get something done about it.
Okay.
Something concrete done about it.
Well, thank you very much, and I think that what we have to do is air this issue, and hope that the powers to be in Washington will come to their senses and bring an end to this these decades of racism and sexism at USDA. Thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Okay, Marty. Anything you want to add? Everybody is pretty well put their two cents worth in, and I think it was a very good show. And I think for our listening public, they got a variety and a lot of information. Something not so much about what's going on with the coronavirus, but about the struggle of people trying to survive in this country, their civil and human rights.
Well, and I agree with you, and it's going to get far worse, this situation, which is nowhere near a pandemic or endemic or anything else. This thing has been blown out of proportion, but behind the scenes they're doing a lot of things. The intent of this is not anybody's health or anything to protect the public. We just saw a vote in the Senate last night that officially overthrew our corporate government, and now we are in the hands of corporations. Life as we know it is never going to return to what it was. They're talking about projecting this out for at least 18 months. I don't know why. I don't know why they've declared an emergency over this. It isn't an emergency. It is an issue, but it is not an emergency. But everybody grab your butts, because this is going to get way worse than what it is right now. And for those of you listening who seem to think that the black farmers are unnecessarily complaining, what they've been enduring for decades is about to fall on you. And we'll see how you deal with it. I think you're going to have to go to these gentlemen and ask for advice on how to proceed, because they've become quite expert at it. I thank everyone who came on tonight. Lawrence, I thought this was really good, and it was good to update with all of our former guests and people who have been on. I think this was good, because people always have questions of what happened, and I think we answered a lot of them this evening. To our friend Tubby down there in Texas, honey, get you some moonshine and sit down. It'll get better, I promise. But Lawrence, you got anything you want to say?
No, thank you again, Marty. I think it was a good show, and thanks for the airtime to get all those individuals on air. And so your listening public will get a chance to really get an idea as to what has happened since they came on in 2019. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. And for everybody that called in from those 202 numbers with your block number, don't lurk. If you got questions or comments, you need to get right on here. Just hit the number one and flag me. I'll put you right on air. Lisa, were you going to – or Shannon? Somebody said something there. Okay, I think that's it. I want to remind everybody.
Oh, there was somebody.
Yeah.
Is that you, Lisa?
No, it's Shannon, I think.
Shannon?
Yeah.
Shannon, you're breaking up really bad. We can't get you. Okay. There's something wrong with the connection there. Somebody's messing with us. Everybody, thank you for tuning in this evening. As a reminder, these shows are brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit taking place this year, July 28th to 31st. I hope we all can make it out there. As I understand it, they're still forging ahead, making plans for the summit. We'll see how that comes out. But my plans are to be there. If it's on, I'll be there. So everybody, thank you. All of our guests and callers, thank you so much. And Lawrence, thank you for leading the charge on this.
Well, glad to do it anytime, Marty. We're working as a team. Thank you
there
for
you go.
Opening up the airways for us. Thank you.
You bet. Anytime. And thanks to all of our listeners. We'll be back next week with another edition of Whistleblowers. And we're going to have Tanya Hathaway on. She's been hammering Oklahoma bad about the corruption there. And we just got news today that the FBI moved in. So a lot to report. But we'll be back next Thursday night, and we'll talk to you all then. Good night, everyone.
Thank you, and good night.